is governed by profession for the profession and teachers for the teachers. And as a result, the chairperson of council himself and the deputy are professional teachers. And 60% of council is made up of organized teaching profession. In line with that, council has got 30 members. 18 of them are members of the organized teaching profession, as I've already indicated that 60% of them are that. And because it's a self-regulatory body, it's self-funding through members who are contributing currently 15 rand per month to the council. Except for the continuing professional teacher development system, which is funded directly from fiscals, however through the line budget of the Department of Education. We are also presenting some of the legislation chairs that are also taking on what we are on our mandate. We are part of Chapter 6 of the Public Finance Management Act, and hence we are accountable to Parliament, and obviously the Department, according to the Department of Education, and make sure that National Treasury also has therefore, it's imperative for us to work with other professional councils to make sure that we really improve the sector and support what the minister is working towards in terms of prioritizing those other areas. Who is eligible to register? I would say all educators that are employed in terms of the employment of educators. This should be our school-based educators, but also educators that are working in the provincial departments of education and districts and sectors and national education who are employed in that particular act. We do not register people that are employed in terms of the public service act. I think we need to be clear on that one. It's only those that are employed in terms of the EE. Also, we register educators that are employed in the independent schools, also in the TVET sector, and also in the CET colleges. So that's our area of jurisdiction in terms of who can we register. We do not register anyone who does not deal with curriculum in school. For example, our coaches, our securities, because every time when we have a problem in school, for example, there was a problem in Soweto where one of the security guards infected said learners, and people were saying, where is it? And we need to make it very clear that our school is only limited to the educators in schooling and not necessarily other people that are working in the schooling environment. And therefore, from that angle, we deal with both the preschooling, the schooling sector, the post-schooling, but post-schooling limited to the TVET and also the CET colleges. We are not registering the higher education sector in terms of your teacher education lecturer. ECD, currently, we're limiting it to the grade R in schooling, but however we have knowledge and we are aware that there's a move, a resolution to move the pre-grade R ECD sector into the DBE, the migration process. We are working very closely with DBE and also SAQUA, PLRC and other relevant bodies in terms of working towards the professionalization of that particular sector from the registration point of view, but also from looking into the qualifications. We registered foreign nationals, and I think when I deal with that, I'll be able to see how many foreign nationals are registered in our books. And I know just yesterday these kind of issues were in the media to say but most of them in schools and they are hitting schools that are not being registered, but I think we'll be able to clarify that. I've spoken about the focus schools to say we are registering those people that are working in focus schools, but we are having collaborations with other professional councils because those people are not necessarily educators. And therefore, in working with them, we need to make sure that we work closely with those councils. Just to give you a typical example, we've got many therapists and psychologists in our schools. And therefore, if we are going to register you as a therapist or a psychologist, it's important that you are a registered member of your original professional council. In this case, we have a dual membership from the HPCSA, the Professional Council of South Africa, but also from state. If you are a social worker in a school, you will also be coming from your South African Council of Social Services profession and also be registered in this state. As I said, I'm talking about the teacher college measures with that one. Our revised registration scope, as I've already indicated, we do have fully qualified educators. These are the people who are considered as qualified. And also student teachers that are, we register them from third year and also fourth year because they go into our schools to teaching practice. And therefore, if something happens with the learner, in terms of the school of professional ethics, we need to make sure that we have jurisdiction over them. The special category of that we are working with other professional councils in terms of making sure that those are registered. We also trying to do away not both in Department of Home Affairs and also Department of Higher Education and Training, are heavy revisers in terms of the critical skills that are required by the country. And therefore, our processes obviously would need Department of Higher Education and Training, but also Department of Home Affairs to assist us with those processes. The screening, remember earlier on I talked about the one of the reasons why we are registering also is to make sure that we do digital business to practice. Therefore, the screening against the National Child Protection Register is very important, including the screening against the National Register of Sexual Offenders. Currently, we do not screen against those two because we need to finalize the access issue. However, it's not a trained match per se because we are doing the SAPS clearance. And obviously, for you to get into the Sexual Offenders Register, you must have been convicted. And the police clearance should be able to give us information and data on those ones that are having sexual criminal records. We are indicating, Chair, that ever since we started from January 2019 in terms of police clearance, these are some of the things that we are finding from the teachers, issues of assault, issues of attempted murder, threatening police officers, etc., etc. And we do have a P2Teach committee that is dealing with those kind of issues. If you have a criminal record against your name on some of those issues, the P2Teach committee will sit and be able to assess whether you can be permitted to register or not. And we are presenting, Chair, quickly the registration statistics just for the committee to know and to indicate that we just introduced online registration system, which has been tested with about 5 universities in terms of the student teachers. And we are almost ready to go live in terms of that particular one and make sure that everybody registers online. In terms of our targets and indicators for registration in this financial year, we're looking at the strategic objective that says to register and register practicing and newly qualified educators in the country and with special category of educators. Therefore, the indicators for this current financial year 2019-20 are 1, numbers of newly educators registered. We're looking at 35,000, and also number of educators updating and renewing their registration status, we're looking at 40,000. The second program is on legal and ethics. We are indicating that the Act requires us to develop a code of professional ethics and review from time to time. We are also indicating we've got procedures and processes that we implement in terms of determining fair hearing procedure within the system, but also the kind of sanctions we have. The minimum one or less harsh one that we can give to an educator is caution, and the most harsh one is striking an educator off the register. So those are the two extremes. And in between, we've got other things. And here we are presenting on the next slide the frequency of misconduct cases by province from 2014 and 2019. We just took the 5 years so that you can have an idea of what we have in the system. And we also want to indicate that while you may think from the statistics, it looks like you have too many cases in the Western Cape, KZN, and Gauteng. We need to just clear that up and correct it. Section 26 of the SAFE Act requires that all the employers, once they've dealt with the cases and have got sanctions, except for reprimand, they must finish SAFE with all these cases. And the statistics that you are seeing is because those 3 provinces are complying to the T, it doesn't necessarily mean these provinces have got more teachers who are really contravening the act than any other provinces. So we're working closely with the DG and also the department and HEDCOM to make sure that all other provinces really are coming to the party in terms of presenting the same. We are also giving you the misconduct cases by type terms of our APP for 2019-2020, we are moving towards reducing the number of violations of the Code of Professional Ethics. And in terms of the indicator that we have there, we look at the percentage of cases finalized. And we're saying we will be in a position to deal with 75% as a target for the current financial year. That program is on continuing professional development system. Remember, I indicated earlier on that in terms of the state and in terms of the regional development plan, our role is to quality assure the providers that are offering professional development. That is your provincial education department, your teacher union, higher education institutions, including NGOs, private providers, etc. Once we've approved them, we also endorse their professional development institutes and award professional development points to them so that we can ensure that the programs are fit for purpose and when educators participate in them, already they have points allocated to them. So that's in summary what the CCTV narration system is all about. And in managing that particular system, we are saying educators must participate in three types of professional development in terms of something that they do for themselves, teacher self-initiated professional development, but also we're saying at school level, principal and SMPA for the responsibility to also develop teachers. We will award points to school-based professional development, and thirdly, from a system perspective, you have employers at various levels, but also other providers that are offering continuing professional development. And therefore, teachers are supposed to earn 150 points in a 3-year cycle, and they will be awarded the certificate that we highlight in there. Currently, in terms of the National Professional Teacher Education and Development Policy, the CCTV management system is for the teachers in schooling only. And for the current financial year, we are saying the strategic objective for that particular program is to promote career-long quality continuing professional development for all school-based educators. And we do have four different indicators. One, number of educators signed up to the CPTV system. We've already signed up plus minus 420,000. And obviously, we are rounding off that particular indicator, which may not necessarily adhere in the next 5-year strategic plan. And we, in terms of our quality assurance role, we're looking at number of professional development providers approved. And for the current financial year, we're looking at 130. And second, 30 the number of new professional development agencies endorsed. Our target is 700. And the number of educators being supported on professional development, and not necessarily training, but being supported broadly in terms of continuing professional development, including the system for continuing professional development, and we're looking at 10,000 for the system. Fourth program is on professional standards, and that particular program is taken within the broader context of professionalizing the teaching profession, as I've already indicated. And one of the reasons really it's important for us to professionalize the teaching profession is to ensure that the state and the standing of the teaching profession and its internal quality in terms of professionalism, it's really looked after across the teacher education and development continuum. And we are doing that because as we walk around, this whole issue of not respecting the teaching profession is continuing because people are seeing teaching as a free-for-all, they are seeing teaching profession as an afterthought, and that's the reason. I think we can see within the system in terms of everybody who does a particular qualification, later on if they can't succeed, they think about teaching as an afterthought. So those are some of the things that we are seeing. We really need to deal with and make sure that we give the teaching profession the status it deserves. And obviously, the National Development Plan is also making that up in terms of kind of a designation that we want to have, and I think ultimately we look into a certified teacher as equivalent. I'm going to adopt some of the explanation of the standards just to get to the part. And therefore, in line with the process of professionalizing the teaching profession, we have a part that we proposed, and Council has adopted it and we are busy with the stakeholders in terms of making sure all of us are on the same page and we have a buy-in. We're looking at the criteria for recruitment into selection into initial teacher education rather than just accepting everybody and everyone to come into the profession. We're looking into the teacher preparation, teacher training in terms of the prospective teachers within the higher education institutions to say we need to make sure all the higher education institutions adhere to the same professional teaching standards and meet certain minimum requirements to produce student teachers. And we are working with the Department of Basic Education in terms of coming up with a mandatory induction program so that when you graduate, you have teachers that go into mandatory induction and prior to them getting full registration status. So we will only award, when we implement this, the full registration status and also the proposed designation to teachers who've gone through the mandatory induction process that we are working with the Department of Basic Education. And we are moving also to a process of certifying teachers and recertifying. And again, it's one process that we need to consult on. We have the standards that have been approved by Council Professional Teaching Standards, and one of the things that we used was professional teaching in our hands. Again, I'm not going to go through them in the interest of time. You have them in front of you. They have gone through the HEDCOM in the DDE. They will be going through CEM not long, so that they can be finalized and gazetted for implementation. With regard to the APP for the current financial year, our strategic objective is to enhance teacher preparation and professional practice. And in terms of the indicator, we have set professional teaching standards. And the current financial year, we need to make sure that those professional standards are gazetted. The last program, Chair, Program 5, is on research policy and training. And we are presenting to you the research project undertaken today. And also part of the bigger project that we've been, or bigger program or project or even campaign that we've been working on, and we are continuing in this financial year, is the issue of teachers' rights, responsibility. And I think you know and are aware of the violence that is happening in schools, issues of safety. And as part of our contribution to what Minister started last year, was to develop this program, and the output is the research, the amount of research that we've done. We've gone to all the 9 provinces, we dealt with the focus group sessions with the teachers themselves in schools and learners, so that we can get the solution from the learners. The research report is available, and the first draft handbook for teachers on those issues is out. We are going back to them in the 9 provinces, just for them to finalize the input before we can release it to the teaching profession and capacitate teachers on how to deal with some of the issues that are coming out. And the indicators that we have on that particular program are 3. One on the number of research reports produced in line with the state research policy and agenda, we are targeting 2 for the current financial year. The number of provincial practitioner-based research conferences, we target to 9 across the 9 provinces. The establishment of the resource center and virtual library in line with the country's and president's priority in terms of reading, and also our minister, we're looking at the resource center being established, but with an ultimate goal of having a virtual library across the country oppressed by any teacher wherever they are. We believe that as much as we are advocating reading to learners, we need to also be advocating reading to ourselves as teachers so that we can talk to each other. Otherwise, we become one-sided and we don't have well-trained teachers that are supporting that teaching their students. I'll hand over to Chair quickly to the CFO just to wrap up with the infrastructure and how finance.
Then we come to the slide which shows the current year's budget, which is 1920. Our revenue is at 109 million, which we have broken it down into those components which are on the slide, although the bigger chunk you'll see goes to administration, because that's where it's been all the salaries. Are included. When we look at the revenue, our revenue comprises of our registration fee, which is 400 for foreigners and 200 for South Africans. And our main funding, which is almost 80 million, is called the membership fee, which we collect on a monthly basis at a rate of 15 rand currently, which started on the 1st of November 2017, and we project that it will remain the same during the entire MTF period. Approval has also been obtained from Treasury to subsidize the implementation of the CBCD for the year 2020 at an amount of 20 million. The CEO indicated that CPTD, we do the management of it, we don't provide it. And for that purposes, processes have been established whereby the Treasury funds that administration of the CPTD. Then we currently have three provincial offices, of which the budget are included in the submission in terms of all operating budget lines. The council is also on track to open the remaining two, which I think the CEO indicated that Western Cape and Eastern Cape are still remaining. We did issue our bids, but in getting the right properties to establish the offices, we were not successful on time, but we are busy with the alternative. Means to ensure that we do get started in these provinces, whereby other means like mobile offices are being researched. But anyway, the council is prioritizing the purchase of own offices compared to rental, because rental is not sustainable. In those offices, we'll continue providing all mandatory functions of faith. We currently is at 40 million, which is set aside to purchase these buildings in the five provinces, including the ones which we are currently renting. We are also in the process of acquiring our fleet to mitigate the rising traveling costs, because our services are mostly rendered at the grassroots level, and we have a lot of people who are doing more traveling than administrative component. Thank you.
Okay, honourable members, because we must give Maurice to also do the presentation. I think it that we are noting everything that Sais has raised, and then we'll both and I also want to welcome the Office of the Auditor General. You are welcome. Thanks,
thank you very much, Chairperson. I want to quickly just hand over to Professor Mampane, member of the Executive Committee of Council, to do the opening remarks. I'll take from Professor Mampane.
Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee of Basic Education, Ms. Mbingo Kigaba. Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education, good morning. Please allow me to start by introducing the delegation from Umalisi. I'm starting with Dr. Mafuna Komisi, the CEO of Umalisi. I'm going to meet Jacqueline Rousseau, who is the Chief Financial Officer over there, and Ms. Stella Mutimehi, Senior Manager Strategy and Governance. It is my pleasure to lead the Umalisi delegation on behalf of the Chairperson of Umalisi, Council, Professor John Volnick, to share the Umalisi 2019-2020 Annual Performance Plan with members of the Portfolio Committee. Unfortunately, Professor Volnick could not join us today because of his involvement in a critical Council workshop and meeting today and tomorrow in Pretoria. First, I wish to express my gratitude to the previous Portfolio Committee on Basic Education under the leadership of Honorable Nomalungelo Gina for the outstanding work it did in performing its oversight role of keeping us accountable by calling us to numerous meetings to report on the work of Umalisi. It is because of the previous committee's unwavering support and guidance that Umalisi has remained an organization that is respected in the region and internationally in the area of quality assurance of basic education. We therefore look forward to the same interaction and guidance from this committee. The Minister of Basic Education, Ms. Angie Motega, has appointed Professor John Volnick to lead the 6th Umalisi Council for another 10 spanning from 2018 to 2022. Similarly, the Minister appointed a full cohort of capable men and women to form part of the 6th Umalisi Council to ensure that the work of Umalisi continues unabated. On behalf of the Chairperson, I wish to thank the Minister for the confidence and honor bestowed upon us to play an oversight function on an organization that quality assures basic education in the country. In the same vein, I must acknowledge the work done by the previous Council, which achieved a number of milestones during its tenure. In this regard, the new Council commits to doing its best to guide and monitor the performance of this organization. Therefore, I would like to say Umalisi has an unbroken record of unqualified audit reports since its establishment. And in this respect, the previous Portfolio Committee has challenged us to attain a clean audit in the new term. Therefore, Council has commissioned management to put systems in place towards the attainment of a clean audit. As Council, we view this in a very serious light because it reflects on our fiduciary responsibility as the accounting authority for Umalisi. Today we present to you the performance plan developed for the current financial year. This plan was put together under the guidance and is committed to support management in its implementation. The 2019-2020 plan is presented with full realization that there are a number of societal, economical, and environmental factors that influence Umalisi's operations directly and indirectly. As a result, Council's commitment to overseeing policy implementation as expressed in the plan and supporting the entity towards attainment of its targets within the limitation of its financial resources. As far as the details of the plan are concerned, I will now hand over to the CEO of Umalusi, Dr. Ragomisi, and his team to take the honorable members through the annual plan. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor Mabani. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education. And also greetings to my colleagues from SAIS and colleagues from the Department of Basic Education. I'll be sharing the presentation with Ms. Delam Semekhi, Senior Manager for Strategic Planning and Reporting, and also with the CFO, Major Gomito Song. The presentation is going to be broken down into three sections, namely the overview of the work of Umalusi. And then we are going to go to section two, which is the annual performance plan, and then we look at the budget 2019-2020, 2021-2022. And section one will be outlined as follows: the background, the national qualifications framework, the role of Umalusi, our mandate, summarize qualifications on the general and federal education and training qualifications staff framework, and our organizational structure. That's how we're going to organize. First of all, Umalusi derives its mandate from two pieces of legislation, namely the National Qualifications Framework Act number 67 of 2008, NKF, and then the General and Federal Education and Training Quality Assurance Act, acronym GENFEDQA Act number 58 of 2001, as amended in 2008. The amendments came as a result of the NKF Act. There had to be alignment between the two pieces of legislation, hence the need for the amendment of the founding act of Umalusi. Regarding the National Qualifications Framework, it's very important to note that it intends to provide for the National Qualifications Framework. South Africa has got a 10-level National Qualifications Framework, and in that National Qualifications Framework, Umalusi occupies levels 1 to 4. Also, it aims to provide for the responsibilities of the Minister of Labour and the Minister of Education. Also to provide for the establishment of the South African Qualifications Authority, SAQA, and the 3QCs, which I will mention later on. Further on, it aims to give an integrated framework of learning achievements. It ensures the facilitation of access, mobility, and progression. And it aims to enhance the quality of education and to accelerate redress in our education system to contribute for the full personal development of each learner and the social and economic development of the country. What follows, Chairperson, is a graphic representation of the National Qualifications Framework. As I indicated, Umalusi occupies the space in blue, which is levels 1 to 4, and that forms the basic education of our system, and part of it is also post-school education. Level 5 to 10 will be the space occupied by a sixth organization, the Quality Council, called Council on Higher Education, that quality assures the work of the universities. Then we've got a new kid on the block, a Quality Council for Trade and Occupation, that operates in the main with the sector education and training authorities, the CITES. Those are the three sister organizations that work closely with the South African Qualifications Authority. Umalusi, Chairperson, is the Quality Council responsible for qualifications that are registered in the General and Federal Education and Training Qualification Staff Framework. You'll observe that when I talk about Umalusi's work, I talk about staff framework because it is a subsystem in the National Qualifications Framework. We ensure that the providers of education and training have the capacity to deliver and assess qualifications and learning programs, and that they do so to the expected standard of quality. We are a quality assurance body, and they ensure that the delivery of the programs and qualifications that appear on our staff framework are delivered at the right level in terms of standards. Now, we've got different assessment bodies. We've got two that are public. Those are driven by government departments. And we've got three that are private, that are privately owned by independent entities in the country. Now, if we were to look at the qualifications that are on offer, you'd observe that the DBE offers the National Senior Certificate, popularly known as Matric, and then it offers also the amended Senior Certificate. Very important to note is also that the DHET, as a public assessment body, offers National Certificate Vocational, NCV, the NATED programs, Report 190 and 191, and the General Education and Training Certificate, ABET, for adult education and training. On the side of the private assessment bodies, we've got the IEB, which offers the NSC and GTC. And then we've got South African Comprehensive Assessment Institute, SACAI, offering the NSC. And then Benchmark Assessment Agency offering General Education and Training Certificate. I just want to make a point here that you'll observe, for instance, with the NSC matric, that it is offered by three assessment bodies, DBE, IEB, and SACAI. The certificates are issued by UMANDO. And we ensure that we maintain standards across the different assessment bodies, so that we've got the same NSC offered by the different bodies. That is very important. And that will go also for the GTC that is offered by more than one assessment body. Now, summarizing our mandate, we have to develop and manage our suffering of qualifications in collaboration with staff, so that every qualification that is registered by us has to be registered with staff after the recommendation of our council. And it is done also in collaboration with the other quality council, Council on High Education, and the Quality Council for Trade and Occupation, because there has to be synergy in the system. There has to be portability of credit. There has to be qualifications that don't lead to dead ends. But a learner should be able to progress from the humanity subsystem into the subsystem of the other QC. We also develop and implement the necessary quality assurance policies in respect of quality assurance of provision, very important. And we maintain a database of learner achievement, and we submit such data in a format determined in collaboration with the South African Qualifications Authority, so that every South African that gets a qualification from UMALUSI, from a university through the Council on Higher Education, will have his or her qualifications collated in the National Learner Records Database that is housed at SAPA. With my ID, you can see all my qualifications from matric up to whatever other qualification I have. That database is very important for this country in terms of the National Qualifications Framework. UMALUSI, according to its founding act, can commission and publish research. And if you visit our website, you'll find a lot of research that we have done in our area of work. And we do research in the main on matters that are related to our suffering of qualification. And also, our founding act formalizes relationships, which include advice to the two ministers of education. We are on regular basis advising the minister, the two ministers, on issues that are concerned with our qualifications, with our suffering of qualifications. And also, we can't operate as an independent, standalone entity, in a silo. We have to collaborate with staff and the other QCs, otherwise the NQF will not function. So that collaboration is very important. We are also mandated to do advocacy on the work that we do. We visit different portfolio committees in the different legislatures. We visit different MECs and executive management of provincial education departments. We visit different universities. We engage with the unions. We engage with stakeholders, school governing bodies. We engage with all those stakeholders to ensure that they understand our mandate, and we do advocacy on our qualifications. We have a council that has been appointed by the minister. Professor Mamai is one of the members of council. At the point of appointing council, the minister also appointed the chairperson of council. In this instance, as Professor Mambani indicated, the minister has appointed Professor John Bolling as the chairperson. I'm sitting there as the head of the administration, and then Mr. Lam Sinekhi is here with us. She's doing strategic planning and governance. And then we've got a colleague, a senior manager who's doing public relations and communications. We've got three branches, as you see. The first one being corporate services, headed by the chief financial officer, CFO. And then we've got two other branches. These two branches, in terms of their functions, are unique in the country. With the corporate services, you know, you're dealing with finance, supply chain management, human resource management and development, and ICT. You'll find that in many other organizations, because they have to manage their human resource. But if you look at the two other legs, the two other branches, qualifications and research, and quality assurance and monitoring, they are unique to Malus, and they derive their mandate from the pieces of legislation that come from Parliament. That's how we're structured, and we don't find any other organization fulfilling those roles in the country. Chairperson, with your kind permission, I'm going to hand over to Mr. Lam Sinekhi to proceed with the presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the House. I'm going to take you through the annual performance plan for 2019-2020. And the section that I'm presenting has a brief situational analysis, which covers the service delivery environment and organizational environment. And then I'll take you through the program structure, the targets, and the indicators that are captured in the annual performance plan. In the updated situational analysis, under the performance delivery environment, we have reflected on the national policies, mainly to say that the plan is aligned to the national development plan and the medium-term strategic framework. And then we have a section on credible qualifications. This is where we want to reflect that the five qualifications that the CEO has already alluded to, we are driven by quality, making sure that all the assessment bodies that offer these qualifications, the learners that go through this program, emerge with credible qualifications. And under alignment with international standards, here we're just trying to say we benchmark other institutions similar to us, locally, internationally, in the region, to make sure that we drive our mandate in the same way, whether it's about utilizing technology or whether it's about the type of curriculum or qualifications that they offer in the different countries. One of the things we have reflected on for 2019-18, because something that we went through in 2018, was looking at foreign qualifications and how they impact the qualifications that we offer in South Africa with respect to our sub-framework, and also alternate curricula. How do we deal with it in the country? At the moment, we don't have a clear stance on that. And because we come into the end of a term, we are looking forward to applying our minds on how we're going to deal with those two, foreign qualifications and alternate curricula, because we can't run away from the fact that they exist in the country. We have reflected on the challenges that we face, because we are an organization that operates within the context in South Africa, whether it's economically, socially, technologically, politically, and otherwise. And one of the things, the first two points that we reflected upon was the knowledge that the people out there have on Umalusi. It's not much, and therefore we are saying we need a lot of advocacy for people to understand the mandate that we carry, so that we are able to meet their needs. And secondly, we have time and again see on you go online, you find that people are selling matric certificates, and it's a threat to our qualification, because then you are going to have people who have not gone through school, acquiring those certificates and wasting their time at some point only to be found out that they are actually carrying a fraudulent certificate. Therefore, we need more advocacy to the nation for them to know that there are certain features. We won't disclose all features, of course, but there are certain features that they must be familiar with to be able to identify whether this is the real certificate or not. All our certificates have got such security features. We have reflected on risk, on confidentiality of information. We as a small organization with a process establishment of about 140, we've got double that number working for Umalusi outside of the Umalusi building. They work from their homes, they work from wherever they are, and we don't know what is happening when they are working under those circumstances. And it is a security risk that we are very much aware of. And that it is important for us to be careful when we appoint such external moderators, external monitors, that we utilize on a day-to-day basis. And also be careful on the recruitment of such. Acts of fraud and corruption, realizing that in the country it is normal to find pockets of fraud here and there. We are saying as an organization that deals with qualifications such as the NSC that is required wherever you go, it is very easy for people to be corrupted. And for instance, one area in the organization would be the section that works with certification. And it is important for us to make sure that that section cannot be corrupted, because otherwise they might actually compromise the security of our qualifications. And also under evaluation and accreditation, we've got people that have to go out there and check whether institutions that are being run privately are credible to offer the qualification and also assess it. And it is easy when we're talking corruption that such people can be bought, but we are saying as an organization, we put systems in place to make sure that our code of conduct is very clear to the employees of the organization so that we protect the qualifications that are under our jurisdiction. We struggle a bit with submission of learner data sets for purposes of certification, because we don't deal with these things as humans. We don't have learner records. We depend on every assessment body to work with us and make sure that we receive correct, not just any data set, but correct learner data sets so that we are able to produce certificate on time, because we are the ones who the public sees as being at fault when there are delays in certificating some of these people who have completed their qualification. Increased accredited private institutions. I think 2 years ago we started for independent schools. We no longer have a 7-year accreditation, but once you are accredited, you are accredited. So at the moment, while accreditation of new institutions might go down, we are going to be dealing with a lot of monitoring, because now once you have been given accreditation status, we have to monitor and make sure that institutions do not drop standards because now they have the certificate from Umalusi. So our monitoring needs we are facing due to budget constraints, we have to start monitoring more and more institutions on a yearly basis. And also capacity, person power capacity in the organization. At the moment, we don't have that kind of manpower. When we continue within the organization, within the environment, the organizational environment, we've reflected on a number of things that we have done or that we need to focus on. In the document, we've captured what is happening within our human resource management and development. I think I'll just highlight the fact that we underwent employment equity assessment with the Department of Labor, and there were a number of gaps that we had. As it is, this financial year, we are implementing a 3-year plan to try and catch up with the gaps that were identified. In terms of corporate governance, we are on course in terms of dealing with addressing audit findings, managing risk, and making sure that our risk profile is improving. On ICT, the main focus has been on compliance with the ICT corporate governance framework, and we are above 90% towards that compliance. But other than that, last year we struggled a lot with vacant positions in the area, but we have managed to fill them in this current financial year. So we are hoping that the planned targets under ICT will be achieved as planned. One of the key areas that need improvement is our minimum management information system. In terms of PR and communications, we've got platforms that we have for communicating our messages and information about our sub-framework to the public, and we will be utilizing those platforms to make sure that information reaches everyone. We are struggling with office accommodation. When the CFO reports, she will go through something that happened to us in our attempt to improve or to renovate the building, the second building that we own, to alleviate office staff space. In terms of finance, one of the critical things we were doing is strengthening our supply chain management processes, because you know, without supply chain, there can be a lot of fraudulent activities going on. But we are also looking at improving the staff capacity of the financial management services unit. We have listed, I want to go through the acts and policies. I think what is important is the NQF review that took place last year, and that it has implications for us as UMAVIT. For instance, the verification process that has gone to SAPA, it has got implications for us in terms of the qualifications that we offer at UMAVIT and the ones that we certify. We have listed policies that underwent review during the year as we are preparing for the year. I won't go through that. And I will then take you straight to program plan, which is the next session of this part. We have three programs at UMAVIT. Program one is administration. And under administration, we've got strategy and governance, PR and comms, ICT, finance, and supply chain management, and human resource management and development. These are standard programs that you find in a lot of organizations. There's not much new that I can teach you about what those four functions are about. But in terms of the targets that we've set under program one, indicator 111, we are making sure that by March next year we've tabled the next ACT. And then the same indicator is set for the 3 years. And then in the second indicator, the target is to make sure that every quarter within 30 days or after 30 days, a quarterly report is submitted to National Treasury and the Department of Basic Education. The third indicator is making sure that we utilize all the platforms to communicate our messages. The fourth indicator is about improving our corporate governance compliance. Our target for this year is 98%. In terms of HRMND, the target is making sure that all performance assessments or agreements are submitted on time in accordance with DPSA guidelines. The target is 98%. Indicator 116 is to make sure that we pay our creditors and service providers within 30 days. Program 2, as the CEO indicated, is one of our core programs at UMAVIT. This is where we actually manage the sub-framework of qualifications that we have, which is NQF levels 1 up to 4. And here we've got two sub-programs. The first sub-program is qualifications, curriculum, and certification. And the role thereof is to make sure that we maintain the sub-framework of qualifications, those 5 qualifications. We make sure that we evaluate curricula when it is necessary. We also make sure that learner records are certified. And we verify qualifications that are on the system since 1992. In terms of the second sub-program, which is about statistical information and research, we commission research and we conduct research ourselves, depending on the needs, whether it is about UMAVIT or DBE, anything that emanates from our qualifications, we research on that. We also report on key indicators of quality, and we maintain learner databases. In terms of the indicators for this program, under the management of the sub-framework, through the quality council, through the council subcommittee, the QSC, we will report on the number of will produce a report on the management of qualifications in the sub-framework at the end of each financial year for this MTM. And for this year, the second indicator, we are intending to evaluate two curricula. The third indicator, because of the certification work that we do, we are targeting that all error-free learner records, whether for all qualifications, as long as they are error-free, we will print 100% of those. And then for verification, all verification requests that reach the organization will be processed within 2 days. Our target is 95% for that. The last indicator is on research. We are targeting 3 research projects for 2019-20. Under program 3, this is where we monitor our examination processes. We go out there. For instance, the first strategic objective is to ensure credibility of the examination results. Now, we don't wait for examinations to be written. We work throughout the year as an institution. The second objective is about quality assurance, private provision, and assessment of qualifications in the GFET sub-framework. Now, in terms of the quality assurance of assessment, some of the things that we do are moderation of question papers, moderating continuous assessment, monitoring the actual examination processes, managing the concessions and irregularities that may come up, externally moderating the marking process that is done by teachers out there, and moderation of assessment results. In the second sub-program on evaluation and accreditation, this is where we make sure that we've got standards of provision. We have to check that every institution that applies to be accredited as an independent school that offers our qualifications has the capacity to do that. So we evaluate, we go out there to schools, and we check what is happening. But after accreditation, as indicated earlier, we monitor whether they don't have the standards. The targets that we set for quality assurance of assessment, the first indicator, number of quality assurance assessment reports that we do. This year we are targeting 10. Percentage of question papers that are submitted to us for moderation, that are completed, then we'll do 100% of that. Number of assessment bodies that will be audited for state of readiness this year, 15, is targeted for the year. Number of subjects where verification of marking is conducted, qualification, we've targeted 80 for 2019. Number of offerings where moderation of SBA, school-based assessment or site-based assessment, which is happening at school level in both schools and TVET colleges, we've targeted 150 of that. Percentage of accreditation outcomes for private education institutions finalized within 12 months, 82%. This is our evaluation and accreditation process. After we've visited an institution, the target is that 82% of those should be finalized and given the accreditation data, whether it is positive or negative. Percentage of institutions monitored every 2 years after being granted accreditation. I've hammered a lot on this one. We are targeting that this year we will do 90% of those that are eligible for monitoring. I will then, Chairperson, hand over to the CFO to take the presentation to the end. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen. So we had a budget cut of 2.5% that was implemented over the NCF period in December 2017. This has meant a 10.9 million baseline allocation less from the DBE. The process was run by the Presidential Physical Committee, and these reductions were approved by Cabinet. It really had an impact on our baseline and our expenditure, and then we were hit with another blow when the VAT increased from 14% to 15%. As Umalusi is not registered for VAT. That means that all our payments on goods and services, we have to pay 1% extra. This has had a real impact on our budget over the NTF period. Our revenue projection over the period is 175.6 million, 185.8 million in the preceding years, and then 196.5 in the last years. This is an average growth rate of about 7%. our revenue estimates, we get our transfer from the departments, that is the gold bar. We also have administration fees, which is the dark blue, and the light blue is the other non-tax revenue. Our transfer is about 134.6 million, which is about 73% in 1920. Our administrative fees is about 27.9 million, which is about 15%. This makes up our verification fees that we receive. It's verification of qualifications on request from our private companies. It also includes our accreditation fees, the fees we receive on request for accreditation from the private institution. I must indicate both of these revenue streams we cannot predict. It depends on the public, what they want and when they want it. Lastly, we've got our certification fees. This is collected from private assessment bodies. They pay a certification fee for the certificates to be issued. Under other non-tax revenue, which is about 21.6 million, it makes about 12% of our budget. It includes interest we receive on our reserve that's not been utilized due to constraints. We also have a second building, and currently we are receiving a bit of rental income on that. And as well, cost recovery from private assessment bodies. As mentioned in the Constitution, it makes a specific mention that if you want to provide private education, you must do it on your own cost. So we've instituted a cost on these private assessment bodies to pay for the quality assurance fee above their certification cost. Our expenditure estimates for the NCF period. For the 1920 financial year, our goods and service is about 100.2 million, and this is about 55.3% of our budget, whereby our compensation of employees, which is the gold bar, is only 80.9 million, which is about 44.7% of the budget. Depreciation we have not provided for, it's the capital expenditure budget for separately. Depreciation is not budget, as this is a non-cash item. Now, we have accumulated surplus in the 18-19 financial year. We've requested approval from DBE as well as National Treasury to keep the money, and specifically going towards our renovations of our purchased building, as well as our contingency expenditure, and lastly, to upgrade our enterprise content management system to be more efficient and effective. A revised budget to retain submission was made to National Treasury in August, and we're just awaiting approval for that before we save that money and put it in the new budget as well. In terms of expenditure per program, we've highlighted here now the percentages for the 1920 year, where administration or program 1 is about 37%. You'll see program 2 for QCC, qualification, curriculum and certification, is only about 9%. And statistical information and research is only 7%, meaning only 16% goes to program 2. Program 2 is much more, I'm going to call it labor intensive. We've got researchers and statisticians employed. We've got people sitting permanently in our offices doing verification and certification, checking the database. It's much more labor intensive of our own people. In contrast, we've got program 3, which is about 47%, of which quality assurance and assessment takes 32%, and evaluation and accreditation takes 15%. Now this is where we employ the question paper moderators, the monitors, to go and do verification of marking, the moderation of the SPA, as well as the ICAS, the internal continuous assessment, and subject specialists as well. Here we rely on retired teachers to provide these services for us ad hoc, because we cannot employ these people full time. It will shoot our compensation to employees outside of the roof. Currently, our database of monitors is about 1,500 ad hoc people that we use as and when needed. Our cost drivers in the budget of 1819. Currently, our compensation to current employees is about 45%. That's the permanent staff in the office. The complement currently are approved and organogram is about 140. Currently, about 128 is employed. Then second of all is this honorarium paid to these monitors and question paper people that they need to do the assessment. That takes about 19% of our budget. After that, it's our travel and subsistence. Although our office is based in Pretoria, we need to go and travel across the entire South Africa, because we're quality assuring all 9 provinces, and that makes about 14% of our budget. After that, at 6%, we've got our computer services at about 10 million. Currently, because the mainframe is supported by CETA, all our computers need to be on the CETA network to ensure security, and it's costing us quite a lot of money. The next one, we've got about 5% or 8 million for consultants. Our communication expenses make about 2%, our property payments 2%, and then venues and facilities about 2%. The rest is about 5%, it's 9.7 million. As our expenditure, I just try to put the most relevant above 5 million on the chart to review. As indicated, our current staff complement is about 140 people. We've budgeted for 140 people. We have converted some positions into ad hoc employment to save costs, and we're going to see where we need more positions after we've done with our work study to see where we've got capacity constraints that we need to fill as soon as possible. We've got a reportable matter as indicated. We awarded a tender for the renovation of our second building, Building 41. It was a joint venture with 3 members. Were awarded in March 2017 to the value of 36 million. They started the project in May 2017 and payments to the amount of 10.9 million were made. Then we became aware of allegations of fraud regarding the submitted tender documentation. One of the JV members reported that his signature was forged on those documents, and his lawyers made us aware of that, but only in November 2017. We followed the due processes with advice from our legal counsel and applicable legislation about what we can do. But the providers, they did not respond to our requests and they didn't give us any further information on the matter. And subsequently, we had to cancel the contract on the 23rd of November 2017. We reported this matter. We reported it to National Treasury in terms of the PPPFA regulation. We reported to our accounting executive authority, the Department of Basic Education, as it is material. We even reported to the South African Police Services as a case of corruption in terms of the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act. And we even reported to the previous portfolio committee held on the 27th of March 2018. Now, we've instituted a civil claim against the joint venture. A preservation order would not have been the correct process to follow, as this is not factual in this case. We've completed quantity surveyor reports as court evidence, and we are compiling the court papers. Some members have now asked for arbitration, but the cost involved is very high. We are definitely going to court to get our money back. We've also now tried to give the South African Police Service indicated that the witnesses are not forthcoming. We've tried with the Special Investigation Unit, unfortunately outside of their mandate. The CIDB, the Council Industry Development Board, has now done a report and we're awaiting the issuance of that report as well. While pursuing this case, we've initiated a new tender process for the renovation of Building 41. It's now been divided into 2 phases. Phase 1, we've appointed a principal agent as a project manager to help and evaluate and hold our hand through this process. And then phase 2, will be the appointment of a construction team to assist this principal agent. We do have some capacity constraints, but we are making provision for that. One of the tenants we had, we asked them to vacate the premises, so we've got additional space that we can move in as an ad hoc implementation stage. But despite this, we are still delivering on our mandate.
Thank you very much, CFO. Chairperson, with your permission, I'm going to do the concluding remarks. First of all, what we have done as management is that we have made the senior and executive managers to sign a pledge with the office of the CEO in a first meeting to obtain at least 10 audits, so that we hold people accountable for failing to get a clean audit. And also that will be attached to their performance assessment. When they create irregularities for us, we are going to penalize them during the performance management processes. where it is a case of fraud, well, the case is clear. It is a dismissible offense, but where it is an error, a person will be penalized in the internal supply, the performance management systems. We also developed standard operating procedures per indicator to ensure that those indicators are achieved. And also we verify performance outputs on a quarterly basis. And we've got a committee that monitors that internal performance on a quarterly basis. And then also the achievement of the ATP target is part of the senior manager's performance agreement, so that we ensure that people really attain these goals. Humanity has strengthened its oversight on performance information by ensuring that the Audit and Risk Committee includes a specialist in performance information. Supply chain management policies are also updated regularly to be aligned with legislation. At this point, Chairperson, we'd like to convey our sincere appreciation to our council for their continued guidance and taking fiduciary and governance responsibilities on the organization. Also thank the chairperson of this committee, Mem Bingo Digaba, and the honorable members for this opportunity of presenting the Humanities ATP report 2019-2020. What remains on the screen will be our contact details as reflected on the screen. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, CEO. Honorable members, thus the presentations from both sides and Omalusi. I will give you this time to do some questioning. Honorable Shabalala, Honorable Fadebald, Honorable Kuwela, Honorable Bukers, Honorable Novo, Honorable King, and Honorable in that order. Thanks, Mashabalala.
Thank you very much, Chen. I just want to say thank you very much to both presentations. The second presentation from Omar was the only area of interest, I think, is the issue of the 36 million for the building, where there are areas of fraud and corruption. But I think I would like to applaud the Umalusi for the actions that they have taken, because they have indicated that the matter is now already in court, and we hope that we will recover the money that has been lost in this particular tender. But what I would like to get a chair is that if maybe we can be given an information in the near future in terms of where the case is and how the progress is being done in this particular matter. But otherwise, I appreciate the report. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chair and colleagues. My apology once again for arriving late this morning. Chair, to say, if you look at slide 30, that look at the professional registration in value chain, and slide 31, the issue around national police clearance. Your slide 31 has got a number of indicators with some defences on the police clearance certificate. And this is from January to June this year. I recall that in the previous term that there was an issue to also get this done for incumbents. So who are on this system now? Is it all the teachers currently in the system, or is it new teachers? If so, from when? And if So, what happens to the others that are in the system already? Because there are serious issues and we can't ignore them. And just out of curiosity, you also spoke about the fees for, you know, foreign teachers and South African teachers. Can we just have a breakdown? What's the current stat at the moment? How many foreign teachers and how many South African teachers we have? And she just reminded me, my last question was on early childhood development. Am I understanding it correct that the registration work that you do on teachers now will expand towards ECD? Or is it currently, when will it start? Because I've just submitted a written question to the ministers. Well, I'm not sure he's going to respond. Educational and social development. Because there are a huge, there are many registered centres and almost said teachers, ECD teachers, practitioners. But there are also a lot of centres, chair, and people who are unregistered practitioners. What are we doing to find the stats for that? I'm not sure if it's under your scope, and will it be solved under the centre chair?
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity and greetings to colleagues. Maybe I should start with my ministry. The Chairperson indicated that for quite a number of years, Chairperson has a broken record and qualified for the outcome. For me, it seems that you have not had a hand telling me I'm qualified for the outcome. What is then stopping you from obtaining a case in the case? And as part of the reason,
thank you, Chair. Thank you to the both bodies for your presentation and for your work that you're doing. My question follows on what my colleague has asked in terms of the registration of teachers, how speedily that process takes or the time frame. And then a particular question around individuals who have a postgraduate education, for instance, is it a standard for everyone, regardless of their qualification, to then get the PGCE certification before they can become an educator? And then my second question, just in terms of the case that is before the court, is there a specific reason why there's no preservation order? Is it the circumstances, I take it, around the service provider that was used? And then in terms of the, I saw the time frame, and this is for Amalusi, I'm sorry, I I haven't indicated to whom I'm asking the question. I know there's a problem, especially when you're doing qualification verification of foreign nationals or individuals who've got a foreign qualification in a different country, and whether that process has been enhanced for us to verify, for employers to verify qualifications of individuals. That is the chair.
Thank you, Chair. Everyone must appreciate again the presentations, both of them. Just a question to Umalus, maybe even before the question, I must acknowledge the good work that we are experiencing is being done by Umalus. But I just have a question maybe to the CEO. They are making recommendations to the department quite often. Would the response be those recommendations are enforced? And maybe if one could use just a scale of 1 to 10 to try and respond to that question. And secondly, there seem to be a problem of financial constraints in that office, and one might want to know what the office is doing, or the Office of Humanities, to source more funding, because of the lot of work that is expected from that office. In particular, one would also expect that something be done not only with regards to grade 12. The focus is in grade 12. The focus now with the Department of Education is shifting to grades 3, 6, and 9. And it would be good to see Umalus venturing into that as well, and that would be fast. So one would be interested maybe in knowing what are the plans going forward. And then maybe going to sales, just want to check whether it would not be possible for SAIS to do this screening of teachers rather than using the for clearance, using the police clearance. I'm just asking, I would like to know whether it was not possible for SAIS to do that itself. One is looking at the kind of, it's not going to be easy doing it through the police. Just wanted to check that one. On the issue of the safety of teachers also, one has noted that SAIS doesn't come clean quite often on the media on the issues that are happening in the workplace. We do hear SAIS on quite a number of other issues, but I haven't. Maybe it's not quite often I'd say, why is it so? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Morning to everyone. My first set of questions will go to SAIS.
Previously you reported that you had a backlog with teacher registration. I just needed to get clarity if that was being resolved. Also to SAFE, with regard to special needs educators, do you have a record of how many special needs educators are currently registered with SAFE for a clear database link? Also on slide 31, with the sexual offences on the police clearance certificate, it's quite interesting to note that sexual offences does not actually make up any part of that, which actually raises concern because we've seen a number of sexual offences cases that have been increasing in different provinces, that some teachers are not even on that register. Then there was also a challenge with regard to having access to the sexual offences register and the National Child Protection Register, which was previously alluded to us. How easy is it now for you to gain access to these two registers to make sure that we don't have repeat offenders coming into our education system again? Then to Uma Lucy, the new certificate for grade 9, which was mentioned by the president, will that be accredited by Uma Lucy or will it just be a general certificate that will be given? Yesterday I read an interesting article with regard to the multiple exam opportunities and only achieving 8% of the target that was supposed to be achieved. Now if you have to consider that Uma Lucy is then responsible to give out the matric result, I would really like to get your view on this, given that you previously said that it could be that on the system we have learned with only half of the subjects done. And it could then be a reflection that they've actually completed in that specific year because they've registered for half. So I just need to get your point of view, how this 8% actually has been an impact on the matric results in general that we saw this year. So that's basically.
Madam Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. For starters, one, let me say, allow me to join the queue in commending, welcoming, and appreciating the good work done by the two entities in as far as the enhancement of and the quality of delivering the education is concerned. For let me start, of course, with Uma Lucy, but this question possibly will cut across both Uma Lucy and SAFE, the issue of fraud and corruption that is being reported by both entities. The truth is, Chairperson, we are living in a faith-prone environment and where people sometimes can even be tempted to fake their own death. We understand the situation and circumstances under which the two entities are operating. Well, Uma Lucy came clear a bit in trying to indicate that they have got an invisible mark which they are not even prepared to disclose to this portfolio committee meeting, which will say, will validate that their certificate as accredited is theirs and no one else. And we want to commend you for that. But now, coming back home to say, On the registration of our fellow foreign nationals, how do you verify the authenticity of this qualification that they bring to you? I think if you can let us cross that hurdle, somewhere it will leave us a bit clarified. Because I know for certain some people can make a fraud even to the level of a doctorate qualification. But now you are faced with the situation of people coming with qualifications from outside the country and which people you are supposed to register at the level of say. How then do you verify the authenticity of such? Maybe we are still talking about SAIS with regard to that. The truth is your report is putting much and more emphasis on the ethical standards as compared to the professional standards.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it is true, we want to commend you and appreciate that. But our environment, society is rife with the issue of sexual assault, despite this ethical standard emphasis. Sexual assault and even physical assault in the form of corporal punishment. What efforts are you putting in a way of trying to deal with that? Because at the end of the day, it becomes a derogative to our profession. And the other question to say is, okay, no, let me stop there and go back to Umadis. Umadis, the CEO, the whole issue of publication of metric results. More often than not, comes with negative implications. You publicize the results in the national newspapers or local newspapers. 1, 2, 3, some learners are reported having committed suicide. Is it working for us? Or are you making any review in order to come with something compatible which will assist us to have pluses instead of negatives in as far as this publication is concerned? And the last question, Mama Chairperson, let me talk about our standards. The focus in the main CEO of Umadis is focused on, main focus is on grade 12. When I hear you speak and present, and the common denominator in many instances you are focused on the grade 12 metric results. And my worry is, once we have got a focus in any education lineup at the exit point, there is often a lapse whereby the lower grades relax and their relaxation end up affecting the final output. How do you work? You see, Umadis, always when you see Umadis, is that is when they talk about the grade 12 metric results. But now, what about the lower grades from grade R where possible? What is your role? And which role will assist in making it a point that come the end product, it will be as qualitative as even the lower grade? Thank you very much. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Mama Chair. I'm not sure it's still in the morning, but good day to all honorable members and the colleagues, and also welcome the two presentations. I think most of the questions that I wanted to raise, they were raised, so I'm only waiting for responses. But I welcome the presentation. Thank you.
No, thanks, Honorable Adwan.
Mine is that probably as the committee we need to do an oversight when we come back to both offices, both entities, I mean in SAIS and Malusi, when we come back for the next time. I'll ask the staff just to deal with the issues of that particular oversight, so that we've got an idea of also how the entities offices are. The question that I have to Malusi in particular is the issue of certifying students that are from TVET colleges. The reality is that it takes long for a child after being qualified from a TVET to get a certificate. And if I'm not mistaken, it's a matter of 3-5 years. And what is the cause for that? And I'm raising it because we are encouraging our brothers and sisters to go to those colleges, but at the very same time, it's a disappointment if they cannot be given their certificates for that. Now, just a curiosity question again to Omolusi. We are expecting a budget cut throughout, and you've got a problem of finances. I think one is listening to the presentation, and I am assuming that one of the cost drivers is the issue of your personnel as an entity. What are your plans in dealing with this, particularly the budget cuts that we might be going through? And to say just to understand what is the minimum qualification that a teacher must have to be registered with you. Thank you very much. And we'll start with you then.
Or a first degree of the diploma.
terms of registration. The practicing educators that are already in the system are not affected by the current collegiate process in terms of professional registration. However, the provincial education department, when they employ them into promotional schools, they seek collegiate as well. And we've noticed that also what they are doing, they give us feedback, and I know something and other provinces have said that they give us feedback in terms of this process. We did seek legal opinion in terms of whether can we go back historically in terms of dealing with the practicing educators. And the opinion that came, remember the opinion, it said you cannot apply the law retrospectively because the issue of the screening against child protection register and sexual offenders register came plus minus 5 to 6, 7 years back. So that's the issue that we're dealing with. But linked to that is the issue of whether are we able to screen against the child protection register and the sexual offenders register. Currently, you know, in terms of the sexual offenders register, the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development hasn't announced. Remember, there was that embargo on everyone utilizing that particular register by the AG, and the process, the purpose was for the department to clean up. And the minister will announce as soon as that system is ready for everyone to utilize it. So the answer, Honorable King, is that currently we're not utilizing it. However, the police clearance. Remember, for you to get into the sexual offenders register, you must have been convicted. You can't get in there if you're not convicted. And that's where the biggest gap is. So the records that we are getting for the SAPS should be able to give us people who are convicted in terms of sexual offenders. However, the issue that you see is that the numbers that you are seeing on that particular slide, you don't see sexual offenders. Particularly with regard to teachers, if they are not convicted, you know, and you know where the gap is, because we are dealing with disciplinary processes from both nine provincial education departments, including ourselves, including ERFC. If those outcomes or sanctions are not reported to SAPS, there's no way that you'll ever get any conviction on those teachers. So in order to close that gap, what we are doing currently, once we have the sanction track of sexual offense, we also send to SAPS. What the SAPS does with that is another issue. But in terms of the sexual offenders legislation, we have an obligation to the SAPS for them to do the process and find for the law. Unless you amend that law, that's the conditional fee. And the condition. Child protection register still, remember the main legislation, Children's Act, is referring to the employer and not us. The teacher's code remains, but we are saying to the provincial education department, we need to work together because you have access to the one. So we can only be in a position to get the information. You won't get the majority of information that goes into the child protection register through the police clearance authority. More information in that register is coming from various organizations and not necessarily through the police. So we need to still push that there's an amendment of the Children's Act in order to allow other bodies that are not necessarily employers to be able to access that particular. And hence, we resulted on the police clearance to make sure that that would be the one that is giving us information at the moment. And I want to link that also to the question raised by Honorable Nwawo to say, would it be possible for them to do screening of teachers differently from other than using the police clearance? Currently, no. For the reasons that I've mentioned, to say you can either screen through those two other bodies or through SAPS.
the maximum is 48 hours. So that is working very well for us. And it's available throughout the country, and we are utilizing that. We even negotiated a lesser rate for teachers in particular because they are in the country. So that's what we did to circumvent that particular area. Bishops and CEO of teachers, Honorable Novo, we've been in the media a lot. And even if you can go into SABC covers us extensively. When we launched this program on the 5th of March, all the platforms, all the SABC, television, ESPN, everybody captured that particular process. And also, we've been advocating through Twitter, through Facebook, all our social media platforms, including our website, including linking up with the Twitter accounts of the departments and other teacher unions so that we have it. In addition, we have launching, we are launching in all the nine provinces, and again, those sessions were covered. And I know the HOD in Western Cape in particular has been having lots of kids on this particular program that we are running at SA. And we've gone through all the nine provinces in terms of making sure that we get the real information from the teachers in terms of the focus group sessions. And it's one area that teachers are happy with and the teacher unions in terms of this coming to the party with regard to that particular program. Honorable team, you raised an issue on the backlog of registration. I think as far as I remember, it was 8 weeks for that basis and not as a registration. We see that, and I think when we come back for the annual report, we'll see the extent at which it was the past 2 financial years. And we are reporting on a regular basis to CASA in terms of the extent at which we are cleaning up. However, there's no way that we cannot have, and we don't even want to call it backlog, we call it rollover. Because all the cases that we are receiving between January and March, there's no way that we can be able to clean them. Last financial year, we received, I think, about 200 and something in the last quarter. Obviously, you need to have due process, investigations. Once we've done investigations, we need to go to the hearing stage. Once we've done the hearing, we need to report back to CASA for them to ratify and go back to the teachers. So the last quarter is the one that is always giving us problems because obviously maybe what we need to do when we report next time, we need to say in the last quarter how many did you receive and at what stage are we? If we go through disciplinary process, are we thinking on the through investigation, are we seeing the disciplinary hearing or where we are? So that we can have an indication of this whole process that we engage in. Then the issue of fees, Honorable Fandenbos, you wanted to know how many South Africans and how many. From one of the slides that we have, we are indicating South Africans that are registered with cancer are 500 and the South Africans just that said. The foreign aid teachers are 1,200. You've got the slide. And then it will give you the South African national. Yeah, 500 and something thousand. Just that I can't open the laptop at the moment. So yeah. The ECD issue. In terms of our scope, currently registering officially your grade R. Below grade R, you're going to get indication that the register form a qualification in M705. So it will be provisional until such time that they get, and then those that have B at foundation phase or grade R national diploma and grade R teaching, then those will give them full registration. However, in my presentation, I indicated that we are also closing the DDE with SAFA, with ELRC in terms of professionalizing the sector. If we're dealing with migration issue from social development to DDE, it means we've got a whole lot of work ahead of us in terms of professionalizing the sector. From a qualification point of view, DHET is already working on the framework for qualification in terms of the, that grouping. From this point of view, we need to work on the registration criteria, but also the professional teaching standards for that particular sector. Obviously, the ERP together with the employer will need to work on the remuneration issue. So that process is underway. How difficult your issue is for one to find his way back. It can happen. I need to be honest, it can happen. I'm personally busy with a bigger research in terms of the enforcement of the code of professional ethics around the system. It involves a whole lot of parties. You issue a sanction, for example, of flagging a teacher of the register. Sales must communicate that to various institutions. One is the Department of Social Development, so that you can go into the register for the necessary social protection register. As soon as you get into the that register, it means you do not qualify for the children. But secondly, it must go to the employer, so that the employer, if you ask for a report from the state register, then you have another registration, EEA. That brings you ideas to have in terms of social teaching. If from the employer side that is not implemented, you are likely to have that situation. But also from the independent school sector, it's possible. If that the employer can implement it from a public system, then the people may run to the independent school. So we're trying to find ways of closing the gap, especially from an independent school perspective, because from employers, they need to strike you off, they need to block you from the start so that you cannot be efficient to teach anywhere else. But we're also advocating to employers to say, before you employ, make sure that you check these things. We've got a system on the website that you can punch in the ID and be efficient to see whether that has been struck off or not. But there's a possibility. I need to be honest on that. We don't have officials as individuals working in the district. We do have those provinces that you've mentioned, but we have additional coordinators that are working more or less like what you might say, working from home, and since last time we established offices that are doing fixed work at that particular level. But currently, the service that we are rendering is from the current office. We know that the arrangement is not ideal, but hence we are frustrating the process of making sure we have offices in our table. Turnaround time is 70% or even more of our registrations are working in national offices and the remaining provinces. If you walk in, well, by the time you leave with a certificate. But there are challenges with regards to those that are posting. Remember, we depend on the state office as a fresh party in the process. We can do our part from our side, but if the delivery of the postage or teachers forget to change their post, their addresses. The last time they registered in 19, whatever the address was, this, now they want to reprint, they forget to change. So I mean, there can be a problem. So those are the challenges why learning from SAPA in particular and DHET in terms of the e-certification. E-certification, no process involved, you can print it anywhere. We send it to you electronically and you can. Even the security features are even much better when you use e-certification than the current process that we are using. I think I've left with Honorable Murad said. No, before that. Honorable King, you indicated the special needs. In terms of our registration, you can only know how many teachers are registered in special needs schools and not necessarily how many teachers with special needs themselves as individual teachers. That information will help us in terms of our registration form. But in terms of where those teachers are teaching, in terms of schools, the only information that can be the issue of fraud, I think I've already indicated, Councillor Morrison, that we are moving towards the issue of e-certification in terms of our own state registration, because fraud might depend from qualifications, but it also depends from the state registration that teachers are using at the moment. So we're looking into addressing that particular issue. Sexual harassment and also the issue of physical harassment. I think from the statistics that you provided, you've seen across the country that the issue of physical assault, corporal punishment, sexual abuse, verbal abuse is high on the agenda. And one of the things that you want to say, faith can preach the gospel in terms of the code of professional ethics, advocating it, talking to teachers. But at the end of the day, the onus is on me as an individual teacher to choose to be ethical. But we are also saying the amount of research that we've done is also indicating that this is a bigger issue and more of a societal issue than as an individual organization can be in a position to deal with it. There are issues of poverty that teachers are taking advantage of. If those learners are coming from poor households, you have a case, but then they are being given money, as they are being bought groceries. There's an issue of culture to say we can do this tomorrow, we can go and do it down. And then the matter is just we take the penalty and then we do away with it. But there's also taking advantage of learners on especially as a culture subject in terms of your school excursions, in terms of afternoon sessions where you're dealing with sports, you're dealing with art, learners being given the lift. There's also an issue of send and follow. If I request her to go and clean my room and then follow her. So there are a whole lot of dynamics around the issue of sexual assault that I think as a society, as communities, we need to work collaboratively in terms of dealing with. Physical assault, this one is another one. And I think the outcry from teachers is that the current alternative to corporal punishment are just confusing for them. Because they feel it's one size fits all. And we started the research in terms of understanding the factors from different perspectives. I mean, dealing with issues of alternative corporal punishment in a particular module of a school is different from dealing with it if I'm in another kind of school, also in another province. So we're feeling in doing that, in dealing with that bigger research, like we did with factors that are contributing or enhancing sexual harassment, we'll be able to deal with the issue. Currently, we understand why sexual harassment is not stopping within the school because of the factors that are picked up from the bigger research that is done across the country. But we feel the same with physical assault, we'll be able to assist us going forward in terms of some of those issues that we will identify. So I think I've tried to cover all of them.
much, Honorable Chairperson and members. We appreciate the input and the questions from the members. The Humanity Council takes a very deep view on the fraud with the building that we were trying to apply for occupation. We take this matter very seriously. And of the 10.9 million that we paid already for this contract, according to the CUS report, which formed part of the bundle to the High Court, we should be able to claim 9 million rent back. So it's not the whole 36 million that has been paid to the contract, but they have done some work and they were paid, and we employed the service of the quantity surveyors to determine what is due to us, to them, and what is due to us. We will give regular updates to this committee, as presented by Honorable Chavala. We take this matter very seriously. Honorable Suela, on the unbroken record of unqualified audits, the challenge that we have is that you've got a problem with supply chain management on a particular financial year. You deal with that problem, and then there is a slip up in another area. You have closed the gap on supply chain management. Now there is a problem, for instance, of closing the books at the right time, where money is accounted for as income or expenditure in the new financial year when it was supposed to have been accounted for in the previous financial year. That's what we're dealing with. We are vigilant, and the CFO may be able to expand on that. It's something that we also take very seriously, say we have to get a clean audit. And I'm holding my executive and senior managers accountable in that regard. Clearly, because some of the functions that we perform are seasonal, we don't want to keep people full-time on our payroll. We also cannot even hire offices for them to be in regional office, because for the greater part of the time we'll be sitting idle. So in order to utilize the public funds judiciously, we only engage the services of these contract workers as and when we need them. We are qualified teachers, either retired or we have resigned to are available, and they are trained, first of all, before you need them. We give them full training, and then they are commissioned by my officials who are full-time in the office, and we expect reports from them. We expect reports from them, so that there is that kind of quality check in the system. We are guided very, very well. And we make sure that because they become the face of humans wherever they go, they understand the values of the organization. Because you don't have to get somebody to go and visit them at the school or in the public somewhere. So it is a space that we jealously guard. We don't plan to have regional offices. We don't have a need for it. We cover the whole country. I'll come back to that for when it comes to that tough constraints and financial constraints. But for now, the system, because it is seasonal, when we write examinations, when we go in value the school for accreditation, the system is working very well for now. The Honorable Suker, that is the Senate. Suker, okay, thank you. Indeed, the issue of the preservation order is something that we have looked at legally. It came as advice from the members of this portfolio committee, the former one, to say, can't you look at the preservation order? We immediately jumped into action on a level, consulted our lawyers. They gave us a legal opinion that we will not be able to win on the preservation order. The granular details of the response of the lawyer who is the CFO, she may be able to touch on that. But we've already consulted the lawyer, and they say it is fruitless for us to try and pursue that route. When it comes to the verification of foreign qualifications, it is not the mandate of humanists to verify foreign qualifications. It is the mandate of SAWA. And SAWA has got networks internationally for as and when they want to verify qualifications obtained in other countries. They've got international network, they belong to numerous international bodies that help them with us. What we verify are some cases that have been obtained through our system as humans. That's how many that we are as an organization. So we are doing that effectively, and we are able to pronounce that this person did not get the matrix certificate or whatever certificate from us. Honorable Nyong'o, the kind of input that we give to the department comes in two forms. First, in the form of advice to the minister, as mandated by our founding act. And that would be a recommendation. In the main, that would be all the research that we have done to say, at this shape of the schooling system, that is this weakness, minister. And these are the recommendations, these are the findings, these are the recommendations. You take it on this, this is the prerogative of the minister. That is number one. Number two, there are instructions that are given to the department in the form of directives. It is a directive, it is not negotiable, we want it done. That is in the main after the examinations have been written, and we look at the whole process, the whole value chain of quality assurance. And we say to an assessment body, be it a department or an independent assessment body, say, here is an area of weakness, it is a directive. You, next time you do it differently, you do it this way. And after giving those directives, within a month, we expect a plan from the assessment group to say, now that we have identified this problem, this is how we are going to address it. And there is 100% compliance. I must say, the Department of Basic Education in particular has been consistent in doing well in this area. The Department of Higher Education and Training was lacking for some time, and we raised the matter with the different ministers that occupied the portfolio recently. You remember there were a lot of changes in recent years. And they have now strengthened their system to the point where they are also complying, and we don't have a problem with the independent assessment bodies. DBE has been doing very well in this regard, exceptionally well. When it comes to financial constraints, honorable Nyong'o, it is an area that is very delicate. When you look at how big the system that the auto quality assure is and the budget that we have and the staff that we have, you realize that we are not able to cover the full scope of quality assurance. We have gone to the minister, we have indicated the constraints, and this also answers to the question that was raised by the Honorable Chairperson. The minister said to us in January, I was with the Chairperson and some members of council, said, go and discuss this matter with the DG. The DG and ourselves as the CEO must come back to us as the council and the minister with a recommendation. Those submissions have been made to the DG. I've had discussions with the DG to show the kind of constraints that we have. Maybe just to amplify the point, I've got the staff that is overstretched. I'm losing staff for the mere fact that people work very long hours. They can't cover the scope of work that they have to cover within the 7 to 4 o'clock time that is allocated. They work into the night. Some staff members even take leave to go and do work at home. As a result, I lose staff. And when they go to other organizations, including provincial and the National Department of Education, they wait to say, hey, we're having a picnic here. It's nice. We don't have the pressure that we have in mind. That's the third part. One other area that is a pressure for us is that we have the public service system and the CS educator system in the government department. Now, UMANUS has been paying our college, school educators, CS educators, as public service. Now, the salaries of the CS educators in government are better. Now, people are leaving UMANUS for the government department where they are being paid better. This is one of the submissions that we have made to the minister and the DG to say, we have to pay people who are professionally qualified as teachers and who are doing professional work as CS educators so that our salaries are competitive with those of the department. The DG will be coming to the back to me, and then we'll go to the minister with the submissions that we've made. With the staff that is overstressed, waiting long hours, getting sick, and when you get the report from the doctor, they say your people are overweight. The system is big, but we have to quantify shortage. On the issue of the quality assurance that only happens at grade 12, GCE will be GEC or GCE, I confuse, General Certificate in Education or General Education Certificate, at the NQF level 1, the old JC if you want to, the department is dealing with that, we'll be quality assuring that. We'll be quality assuring that, I'll come back to the board. However, lower down in the system, we do research on ECD, we do research on foundation phase, intermediate phase, senior phase, and we check the kind of content and curriculum that supports it, and whether there is a continuum in the system that means the learners will be strong at the time in class. As I speak now, council is meeting with, in a workshop mode to discuss a longitudinal study report that we want to submit to the minister later. Because it has been done by researchers, council has to own it. Once council has agreed, we'll be tabling that report that deals with the gaps in the system through the different phases and where the gaps are in terms of the capacity of the teachers, the content, coverage, where are the weaknesses and so forth and so on. That is how far we go. In terms of the quality assurance that we do in grade 12, we are limited because it says an exit point, and we cannot do it lower down. We can only do research and ultimately give recommendations to the minister. Should council approve, this longitudinal study report should be tabled with the department before the end of this year. Because council may want to keep it here and there, depending on how they receive the report. I'm coming back to the general certificate in education, general education certificate that the department proposed, that the president has made pronouncements on. That while it is true that we are aware of the development, the qualification still has to be submitted to UMADUSI for quality assurance. And once we have quality assurance, we'd have to register it with SAQA, so that it's part of the national qualification framework. That still has to happen, it has not happened. We are aware of the development there. We still have to do quality assurance check that the curriculum that supports this qualification is at the right level. That's what we have to do. Honorable King, on the issue of MEOs and 8%, I want to defer to the DDG, because I'm not very sure whether I'll be able to answer the question appropriately. Then the DDG will assist in that regard. If it is really in the area of humanity, then we'll compare notes and I need to come back. Honorable Morose, UMADUSI as a quality assurance body entrusted with such huge responsibilities by the country, takes a very dim view on corruption and fraud. Very dim view. We stand and fall by our integrity as an organization. Because if there's any chicanery happening at UMADUSI, who can still trust us as a quality assurance body? Nobody. So we take that very seriously. That is why the security features on our certificates are stringent. And there are those that will be visible to the public. You put the certificate against light, there is something that you see that you cannot see with a naked eye, and so forth and so on. And there are security features that will be known by the members of the public, but that are only known by UMADUSI. So that even at phases when I look at the CD, I'll know that this one is fake. And the serial number that appears on the CD must compare with what is on our mainframe. You put in that serial number, that ID number, it will say, yeah, this CD belongs to so-and-so, who wrote this examination in this case, and so forth and so on. So we've got those checks and balances. And we take this very seriously because it's about the security of the country. The publication of results in the newspapers is the prerogative of the assessment bodies. It is outside the work of UMADUSI.
we already approved the results, having quality assured and ensured that everything has been done according to policy. And it is actually not in our competence to say we do that, yes or no. Yes, indeed, for now we focus on grade 12, as illustrated the point. We'll be doing general education certificate, I'm repeating the point. And I've also mentioned the issue of longitudinal study that we have done, that we want to share with the department very soon, on the research that we have done across the system to see is the system strong across the board, so that the employer at the end of grade 12, at the end of grade 9, with the GEC coming, will be strong enough. And when learners perform badly at the end of grade 12, where is the problem in the system? That is what the longitudinal study is doing. We are known for the MSC, but as you observed in the presentation, there have been many other qualifications. But the South African public is not interested in the SCC, GTC, native programs and all those. Even if we make pronouncements, there is very little coverage in this regard. The certification on the side of TVET colleges is a problem that is known by everybody in this country. What is unfortunate is that when the certificates are not released, people see money, but they don't understand the value chain. That we can't produce certificates until we get reliable data from the assessment bodies, the Department of Education, Department of Higher Education and Training, and so forth and so on. With this problem in particular, there has been a struggle between the Department of Higher Education and Training and CETA, State Information Technology Agency. The first problem was the stability of the data set that are submitted, that they were unstable. You find that a student got 70% pass in the subject. When the data is sent next time for verification, it is now 40% or vice versa. Cannot certify when the information is like crazy like that, like the statistics and the running the stock exchange. We cannot. That cannot be done with qualifications. The data must be reliable. Secondly, with the NCV, you had exit points at NCV 2, NCV 3, NCV 4. Now you find that a learner is carrying some credits that do not finish at NCV 2. Now when he reaches NCV 4, he passes NCV 4, but he still has some public that he owns. It creates a lot of complications. So that is what has been creating problems. It's a problem that we have appeared several times before the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and Training, under the leadership of Pinky Potter and Cody September in the previous parliament. Honourable Chairperson has commented on the budget cut and the appeal that we have made to the minister and to the DG to say we cannot sustain the system at this rate. Unfortunately, we lose in staff, and Umaris is the only organization of its kind in the country where when you get new staff members, you have to train them. And you would wish that they stay so that there is institutional memory. But because of these budget constraints, you lose people quickly. And that is a serious risk that you have to manage. Because you don't have any other Umaris that does the work in the country. Chairperson, I would request your permission for the CFO to mop up one or two points that have not adequately addressed. Thank you very much.
Thank you. As for the care, I just indicated the tender was for 36 million. We paid 10.9. I know it sounds crazy that our claim is going to be for 9 million. But what we did is an independent quantity surveyor went and checked what work was done and what still needs to be done. And it's now 2 years down the line with inflation and so forth. So that claim is about 9.6 million, and it includes all the legal costs as well. We want our money back. In terms of the unqualified outcome, we've had unqualified with matter of emphasis on finance, supply chain, as well as performance information. In the last 2 years, we've had great success in terms of clearing out all of the supply chain management findings, as well as the performance information. In the current year, we had a bit of an issue with the finance in terms of cut-off, as indicated by the CEO. The adult employees, the CEO indicated we've got reports, but sometimes they go to attend a marking session or go to a visit to a school with something signed by that school to show that they've been there, they've done the work. Now, it's also an issue about what kind of people do you get to do this job. And we are looking at the sector of these retired teachers that's registered with state, that's gone to school and interacted with children if need be to do a accreditation of a school. And when we look at employing adult staff, we look for staff members with examinations experience. So at least it's only training them in how we want our reports to be done, but not the whole, this is how the examination is run and so forth. In terms of the preservation order, we sent a letter to the committee. I'll resend it to Mr. Brown, just to send to the committee explaining that about the preservation order, why we don't have to work. Our financial constraints. As I've indicated, the grant has decreased. We've done submissions to the department, but from our own side, we're looking at other initiatives. We're looking at another revenue model. Currently, we are invoicing private assessment bodies for certification. This is based on the number of students in past. And we need to look at the enrollment. We need to change the funding model to the number of students who enroll for the qualification and have a quality assurance fee. We've started looking at it. It's currently our certification fee for the current financial year is about 118 rand per student. But if we take all of our costs divided by last year's number of students in past, we're supposed to ask the students about 144 rand. So again, this figure will fluctuate if we now look at the enrollment fee, because the quality assurance is everyone, not those that have passed only. In terms of the certification, there's one or two things I would like to add, because obviously the private colleges, they need to pay to get their certificate. Now, in our organization, if your debtor's account reaches 120 days, we close it. We don't give you any service until you come to us, negotiate how you're going to pay it off. And we're currently sitting with about 7 million debts over 120 days, which is almost half our debtor book. So we've also gone into a process where if a student comes with a letter from their college stating that they don't owe the college money, because some of these colleges keep the certificates as well, because the students are not paying debt, then we can issue the certificate if they pay the fee. So we're trying other ways to accommodate these students as well. In terms of the budget cuts, we've gone through a process of reprioritizing, but the main cost driver specifically for quality assurance is the number of question papers that the assessment bodies have got. We're looking to be more efficient and effective. We are renegotiating contracts to get the best price possible. As the CEO indicated, we also go through not quality assurance everything, but seeing where is the subject that got issues or the assessment body or examination centers we need to pay attention to. And yes, we're trying our best to see where we can get to. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We've got a follow-up on the panel.
Passing certificate for my math because I can't add the column slide 33 on the registered educators and makes me concerned because it says they're all registered educators 653712 and then there's a list of the category. Now that is way more than the all registered. So what am I doing wrong? How does your figures work here so we can make sure we've got the right thing. Slide 33. Your total of the categories is different from stated here. So I'm not sure if I deduct something, if I add something, I don't know.
I won't be able to edit now.
thank you very much. Thank you very much. See you all both sides and to Maluku for the presentation. We are right on time. And I must also thank the presence of the DPE and the Office of the Auditor General. We have come to an end of the presentation. We would allow both entities, they can now leave the meeting, and then all of the members will just have minutes to adopt before we close the meeting. All together. We can just take a 5-minute stretch.